The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Web Studio, Primetime Advertising Corporation, and the Law Office of Thomas Pinkerton. The views and opinions are solely those of the host and guests and do not necessarily represent KCBQ or its sponsors. It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
Of some kind of supreme intelligence doesn't necessarily seem so far-fetched. God becoming a man and calling himself Jesus? That sounds to you like mythology. Well, we have a guest today who believes that's exactly what Jesus was, mythology. Not only does this gentleman deny that Jesus was God, he denies that Jesus even existed at all. To make matters a bit more provocative, our guest today, Dr. Robert Price, used to call himself a believing Christian and even used to call himself a Christian apologist like me. What is an apologist? One who defends a position in ways that make sense, not one who says he's sorry. That's a modern usage of the word apology. But originally, an apology meant an explanation of your actions or beliefs. But it takes no explanation to accept the belief that my co-host is dynamite. Say hello to Sharon Cashard.
Dunamos in Greek. I just learned that the other day in my Greek class.
Greek. Very good.
Thank you.
That is the Greek word for dynamite. Very good. I can't help but be impressed. I hope your Greek teacher is listening.
Oh, my goodness. I can tell you this.
And making sure he's getting the money's worth. How much are you paying for that class?
Well, I'm auditing it for $500. It's half
$500
price.
Just to audit it? Yeah. You don't even get any units?
No.
Wow.
And it is so hard, Bob. Oh,
is it?
My gosh.
Yeah.
I'm racking my brains, yeah.
Well, good for you for taking it. Well, we'll look forward to our interview with Dr. Price at the half hour. The reason it's at the half hour is that he has a radio show of his own, more like a podcast, but that's probably going to be the way of the future someday. And it's at the half hour, so we're going to actually have him on the last half of our KCBQ show and the first half of our KPRZ show. Now, we know that some of you up in Los Angeles can hear KCBQ, but you can't hear KPRZ. You can go to my website tomorrow morning, though, which is bobsiegel.net, Siegel spelled S-I-E-G-E-L, bobsiegel.net, and you can click in and listen to both radio shows. Unless I do better debating him on one half hour than the other, in which case the half hour that makes me look good will be the half hour that is posted. Speaking of debates, many people are talking about the short debate on Fox News Channel last week between Bill O'Reilly and Phil Donahue, held on the O'Reilly Factor. Now, I watched that debate with considerable interest. Donahue did not answer one of O'Reilly's questions, not a single one.
You've had some like that yourself, haven't you?
Well, we've had some like that. That never matters sometimes to the audience. The audience just look at poise and composure. Donahue spoke with such finesse and interrupted so many times, making it look like he was in control when all he was being was rude, and made so many personal attacks against Bill O'Reilly, which anybody that knows debates would call an ad hominem or a foul. He came across as the winner to many of the people who wrote O'Reilly letters. And to O'Reilly's credit, he will read the negative letters as well as the positive.
Unlike us, we don't do that.
Well, we haven't gotten any bad ones yet, but let's not tempt fate, because I'm sure there's people that would feel like writing a few. No, we do. We have one guy that keeps telling us that Jesus was gay and that we should get with it. He hasn't made any personal attacks against us.
Right.
Quite a personal attack against Jesus, you might say. But this lady wrote to Bill O'Reilly. She said, "Bill, Donahue cleaned your clock." Now, to listen to that letter after having watched that debate for myself, Sharon, it is amazing that one could think Donahue cleaned his clock. Now, let me see if I understand how this works, because this is very common today. Donahue is allowed to make any offensive comment he likes, but if O'Reilly dares to respond defensively, that automatically means Donahue won. Or was it because Donahue kept calling Bill Billy? Is that what made him win a funny, condescending little nickname? Yeah, Phil, that was a good one, calling Bill Billy. You know, when I heard that, I laughed so hard, my sides ached. Well, Philly, take it from me, your tactics were about as transparent as a pane of window glass. It's like when Bush did the first debate with Kerry. Now, had anyone read a transcript of that debate, well, for one thing, they would have seen 30 times Bush saying it's hard work, which wasn't very good. But if they actually looked at the argument themselves, they would have seen Kerry contradict himself so many times, I lost count. But we watched it on TV. We noticed Bush with a scowl-type look on his face. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Look at Bush. He's scowling. He's scowling. Must mean Kerry's winning. Amazing. Absolutely amazing that anyone in the audience with such an inability to really listen, with such an inability to actually think, would even be asked what they thought about the debate. Who cares what they thought about the debate? Back to Donahue. What were they debating? Well, Donahue has been defending Cindy Sheehan. You remember Sheehan, the mother who lost her son in the Iraq War. She hasn't been in the news as much lately. They kind of resurrected the topic of her. Now, I mean no disrespect to what this woman went through. There is no pain more imaginable, more unbearable than the loss of a son or daughter. But unfortunately, this tragedy has been exploited by her leftist friends. And Cindy Sheehan, despite her understandable pain, is saying irresponsible things. Mr. Bush, you lied about the weapons of mass destruction. You lied about when we went to Iraq. And when a person takes one position from the left, you notice that they can usually be counted on to take all the positions from the left. Now, all of a sudden, she's talking about how Israel invaded Palestine, as if that had anything to do with anything. You see, Cindy Sheehan has become such a darling to the news media, she now thinks she knows everything. No, Miss Sheehan, since you brought it up, Israel did not invade Palestine. Six Arab countries invaded Israel in the year 1948 after the United Nations voted to give Israel a homeland of her own. Got that? The United Nations, of all places, that supposed paragon of virtue, the ones that supposedly are deciding what's legal and illegal, they legally, if you will, gave Israel the land in any event. Cindy Sheehan was pretty big news before Hurricane Katrina. And speaking of hurricanes, this week's hurricane, Hurricane Rita, they're running out of names. Used to be Movie of the Week. Lately, it's Hurricane of the Week. Our prayers do go out once again to the victims. And there were some victims, although thankfully far fewer this time. Why? Why were there less? Well, partly because of Providence, I imagine, and partly because the governor of Texas and the mayors of various Texas cities like Galveston and Houston actually evacuated the people. And yes, it could have been done a little more efficiently, but at least it got done. So far, it's turning out that some of the places they thought would sustain the most damage are sustaining less, but they were ready. If they aired on the side of caution. Now watch. Just watch the spin next week. Yeah, sure. Texas got evacuated. George Bush's home state, yes, a home state with competent local authorities, I would add. And these competent local authorities had as little to do with Bush as the incompetent authorities in New Orleans had little to do with Bush. But it doesn't matter. When things go wrong, it's always Bush's fault. And when things go right, well, it happened in Texas, and therefore, it shouldn't have gone right, because that's Bush's state, and that's unfair to the other states, and that, too, is Bush's fault. Little prediction. You watch. You'll see. It'll happen. The reason I know it'll happen is because the left will say anything. Anything. The left. You just got to love the left. Bush's preemptive war in Iraq was irresponsible. We should have waited until they attacked first. Of course, on 9/11, we were attacked first, and that was Bush's fault because he should have known and he should have been ready. Of course, according to Abel Danger, that attack could have been prevented and Osama Atta could have been apprehended, but we didn't do it because we were afraid of lawyers defending Atta's rights, even though Atta was not an American citizen. Of course, that happened on Bill Clinton's watch, not George Bush's, which explains why virtually nobody in the media is talking about it this week. But they're still talking about the Iraq war, and that war is wrong. Why? Well, because it's always wrong to kill. And if we kill terrorists, we're still killing human beings, and there is no excuse because we are as bad as the terrorists if we kill. But when Palestinians kill Jews, well, we should seek to understand their oppression. You see, they got oppressed after joining six nations to wipe Israel off the mat. But they failed and they got displaced, and that made them oppressed and made them depressed. It's not their fault. We should be understanding. And if terrorists fly planes into American buildings, maybe it's because they grew up in a world of poverty, huh? Of course, Osama bin Laden was wealthy. But, well, in his case, he told us why he was upset. He was upset that American soldiers put their feet down in the Holy Land of Saudi Arabia. Of course, we put our feet down in Saudi Arabia because we wanted to protect them from Saddam Hussein, who had just conquered Kuwait and who was about to attack Saudi Arabia. But then maybe we were doing it for the oil. See, there's always something. But then in that war, we got permission from the United Nations to fight. Yeah, but we didn't get their permission to fight this second time. All we got was 16 United Nations resolutions condemning Hussein and promising prompt action if he didn't comply. But then the UN didn't really want to actually see that prompt action, so maybe we acted with promptness without the UN, but did we do it because of oil? Well, of course, many UN nations were part of an oil for food scandal, which we weren't part of. And keep in mind, we have taken no oil, absolutely no oil, since conquering Iraq, even though we pay through our noses at the pump. But that doesn't matter. We must be doing it for the oil, and the fact that we've taken none of it has nothing to do with it. We can't be doing this to protect life. Why, those right-wingers who are out there fighting to protect life, if they really cared about life, they wouldn't believe in capital punishment. Capital punishment is wrong, because maybe these criminals were abused as kids. What kind of abuse? Well, maybe they were spanked. How horrible. How terrible. Spanked. We should have given them a timeout instead. You know how scared kids are of that time. Oh, Mom! Not the timeout, Mom! Yeah, right. Well, that's abuse. Spanking. Only an abusive parent would spank a kid. Of course, if you want to kill the kid at 9 months and call it a partial birth abortion because one foot is still in the room, that's perfectly okay. Very consistent with the left. You just gotta love the left.
Well, the left, ACLU is one of my favorite groups on the left, and Wednesday they launched a Not In My State, Dangerous Abstinence Only Until Marriage curricula.
Good grief, that was in the title, Dangerous Abstinence Until Marriage Only.
They're combating that in this Not In My State initiative. Now, okay. This is not a lawsuit. This is kind of amazing, actually. It's not a lawsuit. But
wait a minute. There's something going on at a public school this week that is not a lawsuit.
With the ACLU.
And you heard it here first, folks.
Anyway, what they are doing is they're asking officials to carefully scrutinize the health and life skills curricula, saying that programs are not medically accurate. Inaccurate, yeah, those programs that are abstinence-based. So they contain false and misleading information. They perpetuate harmful stereotypes, misrepresent the effectiveness of contraceptives by vastly understating the effectiveness
of
condoms.
So instead of a lawsuit, they're telling a bunch of lies about what they're doing.
About the abstinence-based programs, yeah. And Linda Kopeckic from Focus on the Family says that the real danger is what they propose to put in its place. And what they propose to put in its place is a comprehensive sex education from kindergarten to beyond that'll push toward homosexual abortion and access to contraception.
Yeah,
there's kids.
And wasn't there some kind of scuttlebutt about how they didn't let Planned Parenthood give their side, something like that?
Yeah, Pam Stengel was in town this week, and she talked to two groups of 2,500 each, high school kids in two different venues, who all opted in to this abstinence discussion. And the next day, Planned Parenthood complained they didn't get equal time to present their side.
Yeah. Now, how many times does Planned – so every time Planned Parenthood gives a lecture, they always make sure that the abstinent program has equal time.
Exactly. Yeah. Now no, I'll not, tell one. Not really. anyway, the Heritage Foundation published a report that shows that taking the virginity pledge that a lot of them take in the abstinence programs is associated with a broad array of positive outcomes, far fewer sexual partners for people who pledge to be abstinence, not to have sex before marriage. They have far fewer sex in high school. Teenage pregnancy is lower. Less children out of wedlock. Less likely to have children in their teen and young adult years. And even if they do have sex before marriage, all of these are positive outcomes, likely, and they're likely to engage in non-marital sex as young adults. So anyway, they're showing very strong a record of success.
Well, if they're being successful, they will probably be some law passed. But there's no law about returning with us as we continue to go through the news. And then remember, at the half hour, our special guest, Dr. Robert Price, is going to tell us why he doesn't believe Jesus even existed at all. He's not just denying that he was the Son of God. He's going to deny that Jesus even existed at all. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Toyota's giant tent sales savings event is going on now at your value leader, Toyota of Escondido. The tents are up and the prices are down on hundreds of Toyota's best-selling models. The new models are rolling in, so we must make room. Come see us and save.
Toyota of Escondido. Toyota of Escondido.
With up to $1,000 cash back on 05 Camrys, Siennas, Highlanders, and much, much more, why wait? Toyota's once-a-year giant tent sale is the smartest way to save on your new Toyota. Come see for yourself. Toyota of Escondido, freeway close where Highway 78 meets Broadway.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
Welcome back to our program. This is Bob Siegel and Sharon Kishard. Sharon and I are going through the news, and Sharon was talking to us about a successful program that promotes abstinence. That's where we last left our heroes. Go ahead and continue, Sharon.
Well, the ACLU is launching this initiative, not in my state, which it means we don't want abstinence-based programs in my state. And they're perpetuating a lie that in these abstinence-based programs, they don't talk about STDs and condoms. And they basically are saying that if you're in an abstinence-based program, you're not going to get any medical facts, which is absolutely not true at all. You get all of that. They might not teach you how to put a condom on a banana, but you're going to get information about STDs and HIV.
There's an image we hope people can forget quickly.
Let me tell you the other lie that they're kind of perpetuating with this. That it makes it sound as though if you're in an abstinence-based program, that you're not offered anything else, and you are simultaneously to the government spending for every $1 they spend on abstinence-based programs, they're spending $12 on what they call safe sex, family planning, safe sex, contraceptive promotion is happening simultaneously. So, you know, they're getting that side 12, that message is coming at them 12 times more than the other message.
Of course, the only contraceptive that's 100% reliable is abstinence.
Right. Right.
You know what I like the most about the ACLU?
What's that?
Nothing!
How did I know you were going to say that?
A few weeks ago called the ACPU.
Elsewhere, the Vatican plans to ban new gay priests. The late Pope John Paul II ordered a review of the Catholic Church's policy on homosexuality after U.S. priests were involved in child sex abuse. And some estimates say that more than 25% of U.S. Practicing homosexuals. They're going to be inspecting our 229 Catholic seminaries in an apostolic visitation. And the gay priests feel especially attacked here. They can't believe that after centuries of explicit or implicit welcoming of celibate gay clergy, that the church is turning their back on them.
Well, that's a little bit misleading because the Vatican never sanctioned homosexuality. What happened was there were some liberal seminaries that started teaching it was okay. And these are men who took a vow of celibacy. The idea that in their minds it was, well, as long as I don't sleep with a woman, I'm honoring the vow of celibacy, but maybe God didn't mean men. That's quite a stretch. But as well as a Protestant who doesn't happen to believe in the Pope, I'm willing to go kiss that Pope. But then they might kick me out of the church because I kissed the Pope.
This is real impressive for this Pope who is willing to tackle this issue just after months of succeeding John Paul II.
He doesn't seem to be putting his finger out to the wind. He doesn't seem to be taking focus groups and polls. Well, good for him. I don't believe in the Pope, but if you have to have one, so far he sounds like he's not a bad one.
Exactly. Yeah, he's willing to do the tough stuff. Well, here's another little note that kind of goes along with that story. The Center for Disease Control found that 2.3% of men claim to be homosexual, unlike the 10% of the population that gets
banted about. 10% thing's being spread all the time.
Right. Yeah, that was, I think it started with Kinsey.
The Kinsey report, I think he was saying 1 out of 4 and males, and I don't remember what he said for females. But.
Well, do you know what's going on in Gaza? I'm really taking a left turn here.
Well, I know that they evacuated the Jews out of Gaza as a gesture of peace, that shortly after they did that, the Palestinians went in and burned down their synagogues. We mentioned that briefly last week. If somebody touches the Quran, there's protests all over the world. But when they burn down synagogues, you don't seem to hear anybody protesting. And now some kind of retaliation. What's the latest going on in Gaza?
Yeah, there's rocket strikes coming from the Gaza Strip.
Great. Well, they turned it over to them and allowed them to make it a terrorist
exactly.
bed, which everybody knew. See, I think the Bush administration made them do it, made Sharon do that. Mm-hmm. And I'm a fan of George Bush, but I'm not going to mince words when I think he's wrong. I think he should stay out of what's going on between the Israelis and the Palestinians because there is not going to be any peace over there.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't.
Mm-hmm. I know. They have to. They've been launching strikes, I guess, since they left. And this weekend, there had been several strikes. And I want to read a couple letters, if I may.
Letters!
This is some more complimentary letters from, like we already indicated, we don't read the bad ones.
Well,
of course,
we also indicated that we don't get them. Boy, I just know we're going to get one this week. We've said that too many times. We're jinxing it. Go ahead.
Okay, this is
meanwhile, read the good ones.
This is from Mary Jo. She said, I did make it to the debate, but was unable to stop to say
she's
hello.
Talking about my live debate that I did a couple of weeks
ago. At New Life Church,
right.
Yeah. My agnostic friend was in a hurry to leave. However, you should know that in comparing the two debaters, Mel agreed that you were much more articulate and presented better arguments better than your friend Mark Thomas.
Well, thank you very much for the encouragement, Mary Jo, and pray for me today because I've got another. This is not exactly a debate coming up with Dr. Thomas, more like an interview, but we'll disagree. And I never go into these things cocky. I never tell myself that because one went well that I assume they're all going to go that way, but boy, I sure hope it goes that way. So thank you for the compliment, and start praying now, Mary Jo.
This is from Diane. She said she got a chance to listen to all of the first hour and most of the second last week. You did a great job. I really enjoyed the opening of the first show. Your political segment was great. Also, I really enjoyed the updates on the news regarding Bush's apology and the real story. Very informative. Hadn't heard any of that before. The answers you gave to your caller were fantastic. I was pleased for her and learned a lot myself on how to answer similar questions. And she was talking, I think, about Kathy's conversation about Buddhism. Well, it was a general conversation. And then we
Kathy
kind of launched
called
into
last week, yes, about why Christianity, why not other religions? That was a great call. Yeah.
Right. I was also very impressed with Sharon's knowledge of the political news of stem cell research. Great question, Sharon. Dr. Evans' answers were thorough and yet basic enough for most people to understand. I look forward to listening again soon. That was great. One more.
Okay.
And then we're going to get Dr. Robert M. Price on the phone.
Okay.
Just finished listening to both hours of your radio show. Each gave me points to ponder, but I have to ask Dr. Robert Evans, or I have to say that Dr. Evans impressed me greatly. He approaches stem cell research as I do myself. Little did I know I had a mind of an educated and succinct man, as him. The basic moral issues that occur within this topic are often made complex for argument's sake. Dr. Evans brought to mind how simple and basic one should start out thinking about the beginning of life and evaluate from there how to proceed. Thank you for having this timely issue on your program. I'm going to pass it along to my friends, especially my children, to listen to. Our children are often influenced greatly by news media hype, and this is one example why we should all listen to opposing views. Terrific show.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, all of you, for the encouragement that you've given us. We're still a relatively new show, so we enjoy the encouragement, but we also like to talk to those who disagree with us. We believe it's very healthy for people to hear two sides of an issue, and you will hear two sides on the issue. Did Jesus exist? Was he a historical figure or a myth? When we bring on our very special guest, Dr. Robert Price. Last week it was Dr. Robert Evans. Today it's Dr. Robert Price. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
In Sweetwater, a college student teaches swimming at the Y.
In Woodsboro, an iron worker builds a home with Habitat for Humanity.
In Detroit, a dental hygienist helps clean up a state park.
In Seattle, a commercial fisherman joins the Naval Reserve.
People across America are giving back to their community and their country. The Naval Reserve is proud to include these individuals among our ranks. Together, we will build a better world. Call 1-800-USA-USNR or go to NavalReserve.com. Naval Reserve, stay strong.
In Lancaster, a Little League coach gets his team to the big game.
In Ventura, a volunteer firefighter orders herself out of bed at 4 a.m.
In Peoria, a CPA joins the PTA.
In Nashville, an aspiring songwriter joins the Naval Reserve.
People across America are giving back to their community and their country. The Naval Reserve is proud to include these individuals among our ranks. Together, we will build a better world. Call 1-800-USA-USNR or go to NavalReserve.com. Naval Reserve, stay strong.
KCBQ invites you to join us for our tailgate party with the San Diego State Aztecs.
Saturday, October 22nd.
Come on out, cheer on the red and black as they take on the New Mexico Lobos at Qualcomm Stadium.
The tailgate party will be in Section E2 and is 2 hours before game time. Free food, prizes, stuff for the kids, and more.
Plus, find out how to win free tickets to the game by listening to the Evening Edition, weeknights from 6 to 8 on KCBQ.
Go to KCBQ.com for all the information.
10% off at christianbook.com? Well, that's like giving a 50 or 60% discount to anywhere else. Because christianbook.com's extra 10% discount for radio listeners is on top of our already rock-bottom prices. Just log on to christianbook.com/radio or call 1-800-CHRISTIAN and mention radio. But hurry, your 10% that's really a lot more than 10% discount is only good for a limited time. christianbook.com/radio. Everything Christian for less.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. As you know, we consider this radio show to be a sanctuary for skeptics and doubters. Unlike some who you would find the church, we do not view doubt as a four-letter word. I think it's healthy to have doubts, to not blindly follow something. Now, our next guest, Dr. Robert Price, has written many books and articles. I haven't had a chance to read everything he's written, but this last week I've read a lot of his things over the internet. And I always like to start out where I agree with somebody. I respect him as a clear thinker. I see him being consistent, or at least relishing consistency. Obviously, he and I will disagree on when one's being consistent and when one isn't. But I've never met him before, but from his articles, he strikes me as one who doesn't get all freaked out by hearing two sides. And Sharon's going to give you a little more of his biography. Now, the guy's got degrees coming out of his ears. I think if you read all of them, Sharon, we'll use up the whole segment. So maybe read some of them.
I'll cut to the chase. He grew up in a fundamentalist Baptist church, had a keen interest in apologetics, and got an MTS degree from Gordon Carnwell Theological Seminary. In 77 to 78 time frame, he began reassessing his faith, and by the end of that, decided that he considered himself more in the theological camp as Paul Tillich. Then he got a doctorate degree from Drew University in systematic theology. And it was the writings of Ton Culpett, New Testament critics in the 19th century, that began to erode his liberal Christian stance. Now he attends an Episcopal church, and as he puts it, he keeps his mouth shut. So Professor Dr. Robert M. Price is at what school here? Center for Inquiry Institution, and he teaches biblical criticism as well as the editor of many books and magazines.
Well, Dr. Price, thank you so much for coming on our program.
Oh, thanks for having me. You know, anybody that's playing Herb Alpert as intro music is okay by me.
Well, you know, I was going to tell you, last week I did a live debate with an atheist named Mark Thomas, and before the debate we talked, and he was a nice guy, and I found out that he likes Star Trek, so I always like to be able to find some place where I disagree. Would you be a Star Trek fan by any chance?
Oh, you bet.
Now, it is interesting to me that people who, well, I couldn't quite figure out from your articles whether you still believe in God or not. Hold on to that, though. I'll ask you. But I found that people who are skeptical about religion still enjoy science fiction. So you still like to look out at the cosmos, and obviously you still see a real awe to life, and life is something to really celebrate.
Yes, and I believe you're quite perceptive. In my experience, there's a huge amount of hard-line atheists and even religion haters in the ranks of science fiction and fantasy fandom. And I notice, well, at least my theory is that they're trying to regain the transcendence they don't get in religion and spirituality by the use of the imagination. So it's no coincidence.
Well, you know, Arthur C. Clarke wrote something very interesting at the beginning of the novel version of 2001. A lot of people don't know that the novel and the movie were written and filmed simultaneously, but you know how they talk about the black monoliths planted by an alien culture that were responsible for our evolution. Clark said something interesting. He said, this is science fiction, but as always, the day we discover the truth, it will be far more fascinating. Well, so far you're a man after my own heart, but you've just got to indulge me one more time. Which of the different Star Trek incarnations did you like the most?
The original, though I like all of them.
The good old. Did you mourn a few months ago when Scotty died? That was
yes,
quite a day.
Yes, he's the only one of the cast I had actually met.
Oh, you had met him,
conference.
Really? Wow.
He was not completely lucid at the time. I was told that he hated going to these things and always got pretty soused before he
met
fans. So, but it was exciting to meet him anyway.
I'll bet it was. I have to admit, I didn't care for Voyager. Not because I have a problem with a woman being captain. They've had many women that would have made great captains. Just one that talked like an elf and a munchkin. I just, whoops, spin ahead, Mr. Chakotay. I couldn't
and with incredibly bad judgment.
Yeah, well, and this whole idea that we're lost and we're just trying to get home, that was beneath Star Trek. That was Lost in Space, Battlestar Galactica.
Right, yes.
But you know what? When I was a kid, I watched Lost in Space, too, so I better keep my big
patch. Oh, me too.
Now, Dr. Price, let's, again, this might be an area where we disagree. I'd like to read you a statement that you made during your debate with John, is Rankin the way his name is pronounced? This is very interesting. You said, no evangelist ever invites people to accept Christ by faith and them to start examining all these associated issues for themselves. Not one, and you say that with a big exclamation point, the Trinity, biblical inerrancy, for some, even anti-Darwinism, are non-negotiable. You cannot be genuinely saved if you don't toe the party line on these points. Thus, for them, to accept Christ means to accept Trinitarianism, Biblicism, creationism, etc. And this, in turn, means that Christ is shorthand for this whole raft of doctrines and opinions, all of which one is to accept by faith on someone else's say-so. Now, I realize that it was a few years ago when you said that, but I am an evangelist, and nothing on that list. Now, there are some things on that list that would be more important to me than others. I do believe the Bible is important. I do believe the Trinity is important. But I also believe in a God who looks at the heart and the motives. In fact, the guys that led me to Christ didn't do a great job of explaining the Trinity. And when I finally understood what the Trinity was, I don't believe I was getting saved for the first time. I would never tell a person that how much head knowledge they have is going to determine whether or not they're saved. So I know you said that maybe this is not something you would say today, but I did want you to start off by meeting an evangelist who agrees with you that we should be letting people think for themselves even after they become Christians.
I'm glad to hear it. I find it very refreshing because my experience over many years at this, on both sides of it, and hearing, viewing on TV, being there in person, reading many, many books, is that once one raises one of these questions and says, you know, I don't think I believe in the second coming or whatever, that one will quickly find that is simply not an option. You'll be told real Christians believe so-and-so, and if you don't, well, I don't know, maybe you'd be happier somewhere else.
So right, and again,
I'm mighty happy to hear it.
Sure, well, and some of those things I would teach. I would actually teach, but somebody's having a hard time with it. Bottom line seems to be that a person is turning from sin, which the Bible defines as selfishness. And I actually think selfishness is a better word because people understand what that word means. And sin in the minds of a person could mean anything. Now, as Sharon indicated when she read your biography, and I was very intrigued, it says you attend the Episcopal Church, but you keep your mouth shut. Now, why do you still go to church? Do you still would it be like somebody who would call himself a liberal Christian? Do you still like to call yourself a Christian, or do you make no bones about the fact that you're no longer a Christian, but you still like to go to church anyway? And believe me, none of these questions, Dr. Price, are meant to trap you. I find you a fascinating person. I'm very intrigued by you, and with every one of these questions, the sincerity is what it is.
Oh, I can tell, yeah. I kind of like the terminology Thomas Altizer came up with back in the 60s, that being a Christian atheist. He wrote a book called The Gospel of Christian Atheism. Back
you
then,
heard it on our show first, folks. You thought you'd heard everything.
Oh, yeah, I did a review of it at the time, not agreeing with it, and said the title ought to be No News is Good News. I've since come to think that that depending on the question that arises, the answer to whether there's a God or not is different. Like if someone says, is God a causal factor in explaining where these hurricanes came from and who got killed and who didn't? Well, no. That seems to me barbaric and superstitious. But if you say, well, do you encounter God in church? I'd say, well, yeah, like the Psalm 22 says that Yahweh is enthroned upon the praises of his people. I approach it in a simply experiential way. There are two moments in which I do not keep my mouth shut. I take communion, and I love singing those hymns, probably to the disconcertion of the people around me, but I love the Christian tradition. And I don't maintain any animosity toward it. I've just found that apologetics led me into re-examining the credentials of all this stuff and getting into historical method, and I found that I just could not allow my beliefs and what I hoped was true to govern historical judgments. And I eventually found the most plausible understanding of the Jesus question was that Jesus was very likely a myth, though no one can know it. But why should that stop me from reading the Gospels and seeing what the Christian way is and hearing the call, like Albert Schweitzer said, to follow it? So I want to be a Christian. I would say I am a Christian, but I cannot, in the honesty that commands me to have, say that settles historical questions. Those I have to just look at the evidence on,
okay.
Even philosophical ones.
Yeah. Okay, well, obviously I've got some things that I'd like to say and a lot to ask you. Thank you so much for coming on our show, and if you would just hold with us over the break, we will be right back. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with Dr. Robert Price.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. Or go to peacecorps.gov.
Yoga, Pilates, kickboxing, aerobics, jazzercise is a mix of all with fun routines for a workout in 1 hour with new music. For classes near you, jazzercise.com or 800-FIT is it.
News Talk 1170 KCBQ.
Welcome back to the Bob Siegel Show. I'm here with my very special guest, Dr. Robert Price, who came to the conclusion that he believed Jesus was a myth, chose to still call himself a Christian. Dr. Price, this might be an unfair summary, but let me summarize where you're coming from with the usage of the Wizard of Oz. Dorothy, the Tin Man, the Scarecrow, and the Lion discovered there really was no wizard, but believing in him changed their lives anyway. Would that be similar to your approach to continuing to call yourself a Christian? Dr. Price? Dr. Price, are you there?
However, of course, with being a Christian, there's more to it in that you've got an ongoing community of ritual and symbol and scripture and so forth that is a nourishing and edifying thing. So there's a lot more to it. But yes, I'd say that's a pretty good analogy.
Now, would you say then that you are not an atheist, that you do believe in some kind of supreme being?
Well, I kind of prescind from that question. I don't find God the answer philosophically. The arguments do not satisfy me. I don't find it helpful to bring God in as a scientific hypothesis for evolution and so forth. It just seems to me there's no God to be found so far if you look that way. But in experience, there is the Spirit and there is God, whether it comes from somewhere in our brain, as a lot of these scientists say now, I don't know. But the question for me is the religious experience a wholesome one? And in the structure of that experience is called meeting God.
Okay, well,
beyond that, I don't know and don't need to.
Granted, we define God in different ways then. So let me frame it to you a different way. Would you consider yourself an agnostic or an atheist to the question, do you believe in a thinking, feeling, sentient entity who created the universe, who we will all answer to? Not necessarily the God of the Bible, but some kind of being that matches that description.
I would say an atheist to that. There's just not enough reason, in my opinion, not enough evidence to suggest that.
Do you believe it's possible that that kind of God exists?
Oh, it's anything's possible. I'm a poor mortal. I'm in no position to know.
Okay, now, you have some reason for believing that it's not probable, though, I take it.
I don't see how the world is any different. It's hard to say how the world would be different if there were no God than believing that there is, and this is his creation, and he's in charge of it. I don't see how that is what difference that makes. The world appears to be just running along on its own steam, both natural law and without any kind of providence. It might be behind the scenes somewhere, but I just can't see how it would make any difference even if it were true.
Okay, what would you say, I'm sure if you were once an apologist yourself, you've heard them all, but we'll probably have a lot of people in our audience that have not had a conversation like this, so I'm sure you understand. What would you say to the proposition, something had to always exist, you can't get something out of nothing, however human personality exists, it's a thinking, feeling sentience that we all experience. And just as you can't get something out of nothing, neither can you get the personal from the impersonal, neither can you get thought from non-thought. Therefore, the something that had to always exist must be some kind of thinking, feeling, consciousness.
Yeah,
I know that was quite a mouthful.
I'm sorry. Well, I don't find that compelling because we're not sure enough what the nature of consciousness is from the little I know of these things, and I'm the least one to depend on this. It seems to me that consciousness is probably some kind of a feedback echo from one hemisphere of the brain to the other, and if we didn't have it, we would be like computers that know things but don't know that they know. They're not aware.
Right, but even a computer that's not aware, we wouldn't believe that computer could come into existence by accident. We believe that a human brain must exist to even program the computer.
Yes, but it's not difficult, it seems to me, to show how some kind of complex intelligence evolved from lower forms of sensitivity and even conditioning-type reason among animals and so on. And with the larger brain we have, it became able, with the stimuli from the environment, to learn what it had to learn and to rapidly increase that intelligence to the point with the so-called bicameral brain, the one side communicates with the other, and the awareness of what we are thinking as we process information is subjectivity and awareness. So I'm not sure that you can. I think Dennett and others are probably right that you can explain the wonder of consciousness in imminent scientific terms, and that it simply grew. We don't. You know, there are cases of complex entities like flowers and vegetables that, as far as we know, simply grow. We don't see little Keebler elves out there hammering them together. So, as Hume said, to make the world or human consciousness like a watch that someone must have made is begging the question. Why not simply say it's like a flower that no one made but just grows?
Right. And now, of course, when I interject, I don't mean to be rude and cut you off. We're probably both used to talking, but
I'm such a big mouth.
No, well, hey, you're no more of a big mouth than me, and I think you've been great. But obviously, our audience wants to hear us dialogue. Now, it seems to me, Dr. Price, and I know you're a very fair and open-minded person, and I appreciate that. A lot of times, when a Christian seeks to explain something in science by attributing it to God, one of the popular things I'm hearing from atheists today is that we're resorting to the gaps, that every time we can't explain something, there's a gap. Well, tell the truth. Haven't you noticed the same thing a little bit on the other side, that whenever there's some wonder in nature that we can't explain, we go, oh, evolution, DNA. But that doesn't even explain it. The evolutionist doesn't seek to explain how we went from thought to non-thought. They could say there was a time when thought was less complex and it got more complex, but there are some scientists who call themselves theistic evolutionists who would say, if we are evolving from a lower order to a higher order, if there is something in our genetic makeup that allows us to adjust and adopt and to grow into more complexity, that itself would be pretty incredible. And that's why, I'm not even giving a comment about whether or not to accept the theory of evolution, but there are people who accept the theory of evolution, and they don't see that as a reason to dismiss God. One such person would have been Albert Einstein. Another such person would have been Charles Darwin himself. I'll give you a chance to respond.
Well, I don't think that belief in evolution is incompatible with theism.
That's my point. So if that's true, then wouldn't we say that didn't answer the question of where the consciousness came from, but we're merely pointing to a process by where a consciousness would have evolved? Wouldn't there still have had to have been a time, no matter how far you go back on the genetic ladder, to say there was a time when something that didn't think did think? Well, we're out of time, so we will come back in just a moment, and I'll give you a chance to think about that and respond. You're listening to The Bob Siegel Show with Dr. Robert Price.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ, San Diego.
Toyota's giant tent sales savings event is going on now at your value leader, Toyota of Escondido. The tents are up and the prices are down on hundreds of Toyota's best-selling models. The new models are rolling in, so we must make room. Come see us and save.
Toyota of Escondido.
Toyota of Escondido.
With up to $1,000 cash back on 05 Camrys, Siennas, Highlanders, and much, much more, why wait? Toyota's once-a-year giant tent sale is the smartest way to save on your new Toyota. Come see for yourself.
Toyota of
Escondido, freeway close where Highway 78 meets Broadway.
News Talk 1170, KCBQ.
We now return to the Bob Siegel Show.
Welcome back to our program. My very special guest, a very likable guy, even though he and I are finding little to agree on so far besides Star Trek, but very likable, a person I respect. Welcome back, Dr. Price.
Thanks for having me back.
Now, I know we got to, I asked you a question, you said two words, I cut you right off and we went to a commercial. I'm very sorry. Go ahead and respond.
The nature of the beast.
Go ahead and respond to what I was saying. I had made the point that I believe that even if we're calling it evolution, even if I wanted to stipulate that just for the sake of the conversation, that we would still have to say that consciousness evolved from something. And saying that brains or consciousness were once simpler, I think still begs the question of where thought came from, non-thought. I don't think any evolutionist would even attempt to explain that. Do you?
Well, I don't know enough about that field, though I suspect they would. I think Herbert Dennett and some others and Julian Jaynes probably have good ideas on that, but I'm a poor spokesman for them. It seems to me, however, it's a similar issue that theologians have who ask, well, I mean, people that realize there were cavemen, not the most right-wing fundamentalists, but where does the soul come in? Where do you draw the line? Pithecanthropus erectus, Egyptopithecus, Zinjanthropus, which one of these guys counts as a human with a soul? It's impossible to say, but the real question, it seems to me, with science and religion is, what is the scientific method? How do you answer questions and fill in gaps in ignorance? You can't just invoke a bigger puzzle to solve a smaller one.
I agree with you, but I would say invoking the term evolution to answer it could also be invoking...
Well, if you don't know what evolution is, and probably there's some atheist windbags who don't, but it's just a name for a process that even I could explain if there were time.
Right, but like sometimes I'll ask an atheist, and I'm, you know, I like you, I would say I'm not a scientist, obviously, and I should tell our listening audience out there, I'm not claiming I believe in the theory of evolution. I do believe in microevolution. I think macroevolution is more problematic. But for the sake of our discussion, since there are people who accept macroevolution and still believe in God, and Dr. Price, I wouldn't tell somebody who accepts macroevolution that they can't believe in God, but I think it begs the question of where consciousness came from. They mentioned that there's something in our DNA, something in our genetic code that allows us to adopt. But, you know, when you say, well, boy, doesn't that seem to suggest that somebody programmed that? They'll say, well, you're jumping to the gaps with God. But
no,
I believe
they're right, because the fundamental issue in scientific method is, how do you go about gathering data to explain what you don't know? Thales, at the very beginning of science, said, well, when it rains, what causes it? I guess we could say Zeus just turns on the faucet, but is that the only answer? Mustn't there be some kind of how? And so eventually they understood the water cycle and so on. He didn't deny there were gods, but he says this is not a scientific explanation.
Well, sure, nothing's provable in science unless it's repeatable. I'm sure we would both agree with that, but sometimes what philosophy will do was we'll ask the question, what makes rational sense? Now, there are people today that want to go into classrooms, and they're not talking about reading Genesis. They're not talking about the Bible at all, but to say there's so much complexity to our human body that it would be very difficult not to at least consider the possibility that such design implies a designer.
Well,
couldn't that
right,
be considered a philosophical rational observation?
It might. I mean, it could be anything. It could be Martians that seeded the Earth with their own life form. Some people think that.
Oh, sure. But see, I'd rather them say it must be something. It must be, even if they don't want to call it the biblical God. We're not even talking about the biblical God. I'd rather them at square one be like Arthur C. Clarke in 2001 and say evolution's such an incredible thing that it couldn't have happened by chance. Maybe it was aliens.
But
maybe it was something.
My point is, like, think of the Big Bang as a more neutral example. Robert Jastrow, the astronomer, said that what preceded the Big Bang, well, maybe it was God, like Genesis said. I think, well, wait a minute, pal, you've handed in your scientific method card here, because it's not to say there's not a God, but you can't just throw up your hands like Jack Chick, who doesn't know what the strong nuclear force is, and says, well, it must be Christ, because Colossians says in him all things.
Oh, okay, right. But see, I didn't make that jump just
now. But the intelligent design thing is exactly the same fallacy. You can't just stop and say, well, we don't know what else it is, so I guess it's God.
Well, no, but what we would say is intelligent design implies an intelligent designer. Maybe it's God, maybe it's something else. But to say that our thought and sentience implies some kind of thinking, feeling sentience, and you can't get something out of nothing, I would think there'd at least be room in science to discuss that. Scientists
sure,
and philosophers.
Says there isn't. It's
but see, people are saying there isn't. They're saying a discussion like that doesn't belong in the science room. Now, admittedly, they will still, in some universities, allow a discussion like that in the philosophy room, and I do appreciate that. But to say that we can't even kick that around, aren't they being like the backwoods Christians in the old Scopes trial who wouldn't let the evolutionists get their say?
Oh, if they're actually trying to shut people up, that's certainly unconscionable. I'm just saying that the problem with intelligent design as a theory is that it's willing to hang up the sign saying, gee, we don't know, it must be God.
Okay, my friend, we've got to switch to our second hour, and stay with our screener. He's going to put you on our other show. But I really appreciate you coming on, Dr. Price. Looking forward to talking to you again in a few minutes. The Bob Siegel Show will continue on our sister station, KPRZ, 1210 on the dial, not too far from where you are right now. If you don't get KPRZ, check out my website tomorrow, and both shows will be posted.